panoply, panorama, panpipe, pansy, aha, pansexual, knowing no boundaries of sex or gender. Sound interesting? Then join Sally on Sundays at noon for Out of the Pan. All those gender questions making you think too hard? Whether it's transgender, bisexual, polyamorous or beyond, we'll throw those questions into the pan and cook up the answers for you. So go on, push that gender envelope, only on 3CR 855am digital and 3cr.org.au.
3CR 855 AM, 3CR Digital, 3CR.org.au, 3CR On Demand, Out of the Pan with Sally, first broadcasting noon through one every Sunday afternoon, currently Australian Eastern Standard Time. Thanks for your company. 3CR broadcasts proudly from the lands of the Kulin Nations at the overlap of the contested lands of the Wurundjeri and Bunurong peoples. And we pay respect to elders past, present and emerging. Hello to any Aboriginal, Torres Strait Islander, First Nations people tuning in from whichever lands you're on, acknowledging your connection to lands and waters, and that it always was, always will be Aboriginal land. I'm Sally Goldner. I use the pronouns she and her, and this is Out of the Pan, as I like to say, pan meaning knowing no boundaries of and getting beyond binaries, all that sort of thing. And we cover a whole range of issues, and I'll introduce my guest to talk about an issue that perhaps doesn't get talked about enough in just a second. There's lots of ways to get in touch with this show, and also want to acknowledge that as well. You can do so via email, outofthepan855@gmail.com, SMS 61456751215, Twitter, Mastodon, Blue Sky, and Instagram at Sal Gold Said So, and that's the bottom line, and posts on Facebook, 3CR 855 AM Melbourne, and my page Sally Goldner. Postal address, PO Box 1277 Collingwood 3066. Any opinions I express on the show are strictly my own. And don't believe there'll be any content notes today, but we'll give numbers if needed. And opened up today with Dragon Blue Blue, which reminds me, of course, to thank the crew from Out of the Blue, diving deep for the marine news as they do every Sunday morning from 11:30 till noon. And someone who happily survived their first time, as we like to call it, driving the big Starship Enterprise panel that controls all the buttons on 3CR. Well done for doing that. It's part of community radio. If you want to get involved in community radio, get in touch with us via our website and or perhaps call the office during business hours. Well, LGBTIQA+, can sometimes be not understood, misunderstood, inaccurately referred to. Well, I've got someone in the studio with me to talk all about that, current issues and more. And it is my pleasure to welcome to the first time in the 3CR building, it is my pleasure to welcome in my guest today, and Paul Byrne Moroney. Welcome to 3CR.
Thank you so much. I'm just thrilled to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
It is my pleasure, and I think we'll mention it straight away. You're no stranger to radio, but this time you're on the other side of the proverbial panel.
Well, I'm also on the other side of the river. you know, and many of the listeners will know that there is a wonderful radio station over there at the Victorian Pride Centre, Joy 94.9, and I've got the only intersex radio show that we know of in the world, the INUS, Thursdays 6 till 7. But we're not here to talk about that. I would love you to tune in. But, yeah, we're here to talk, to unpack maybe some of the myths of what it means to be intersex and clarify. And as Sally rightly said, some of the issues that some of our community faces.
Well, there is a lot to talk about. And look, I'm a firm believer that the more people of, as I like to call it, lived expertise we have talking the range of LGBTIQA+ issues, we need it always. I think it's always a good thing. But of course, in these times which are proving challenging at times, we need it more than ever. Where to start? I might ask to start first by just telling you a little bit about yourself. You're known as an intersex advocate and speaker, and I don't mean a hi-fi one or a TV one.
Could be.
Or a radio speaker.
Yeah,
No woofing or tweeting, not that sort of speaker, but seriously, just to start by describing a little bit about yourself, Paul.
Yep. Yeah, sure. And importantly, too, on that note, too, understanding that for most of my life, I didn't know that I'm intersex, that I have an innate variation of sex characteristics. So I spent my youth hiding my body away from the age of 7. I used to fold my arms in front of me, pushing out my chest and my biceps to try to look as big as my brothers and my friends. Used to avoid going swimming in swimming pools. I started to create a kind of a narrative of protection that I didn't like to wear Speedos, but I was happy to wear board shorts. I avoided school sports, and I also declared myself an equalist early on, not knowing that I actually didn't have virtually any testosterone racing in my body to motivate me to be better than someone else. That affected my social life. I avoided intimacy because I didn't want to be seen. And eventually I found myself at a meditation center, actually not far from where we're sitting today in Fitzroy. And in 1993 did a course called Freedom from Fear. And that gave me the understanding that I could face anything that followed sharing my life experience for the first time. I'd never spoken to my parents or anyone about what I was going through on a daily basis. And I rang the sexual health clinic, and about 6 months later, I learned that I've got XXY sex chromosomes. I was told I have Klinefelter syndrome, that I'm infertile, that I'll be on testosterone replacement therapy for the rest of my life, and I was sent on my way.
Yeah. There's a couple of things there. Can you remember, and this might sound a silly question, but can you remember what it felt like at the time? What were the feelings going through your mind when someone said you had XXY chromosomes, and perhaps expand on that in just a little more detail as to what that actually sort of means, if I can go just down to the next level of detail so we can get an understanding.
No, it's totally important, and I'm sure most of the listeners today will remember year 8 or year 9 biology when they were told that boys have XY sex chromosomes and girls have XX, and that's the end of it. But interestingly, 1 in 500 people have XXY or XX and XY or a whole variety of other variations, if you like, in their chromosomes. And it's important to understand, this is just one intersex variation or 1 in 8 variation of sex characteristics, and there's over 40 of them. But this is my one, this is my lived experience. So what it means is that my body never produced much testosterone, extremely low levels, a little bit more than the typical female, but nonetheless, because of the Y chromosome, I'm a male. And there are female XXY people out there as well. Important to say that. Obviously fewer. But this particular lack of testosterone leads to hypertonia from birth. So the developmental milestones were slower. So my mother was able to share in hindsight that it took me longer to crawl, to walk, to roll over, to even hold my head up as a newborn. And then later to be able to speak. So there was also cognitive challenges going on that we now know are akin to ADHD and autism and things like that, that are directly attributable to my variation. And therefore, those things are traits and potentially could have been signposts as well. No one ever thinks, oh, this child's acting like they have ADHD. Maybe they've got an extra X chromosome.
No, I mean, there's a few layers in that. First of all, most people, you know, perhaps don't even want to think about ADHD and, for that matter, autism and other forms of neurodivergence, but they're probably not aware of or wouldn't think to think, about variations of sex characteristics. Would be the first thought I'd have. I think I want to clarify, 1 in 500 was the statistic you mentioned. Now, is that for your particular situation for all chromosomal variations or something else again?
4XXY. So there was a study done a few years ago that I can't remember the details in the States or something that suggested that 1.7% of the all populations have an innate variation of sex characteristics. So we kind of use that statistic, but we'll talk about it later. Not being included in the census and things like that means that we're not able to actually identify the percentage in Australia. And that would be extremely helpful. But we just throw that figure around. But yes, and some of the other variations that one might hear about, AIS, I hate using the pathologized language, but it's necessary, androgen insensitivity syndrome, when someone has a Y chromosome, but their body doesn't respond to the Y and the androgens, so they are women. That these variations might occur in 1 in 10,000 or 1 in 20,000. So, you know, and Turner syndrome, having an X chromosome, things like this. We are trying to depathologize our community as best as we can, because even the AMA last year at the national conference put forward a motion that our community be recognised as being part of human diversity.
Which is all it is. I mean,
yes.
Intersex, variation of sex characteristics is different to, we'll call it the 98.3% of the population, but it's not better, it's not worse, it's just different in a neutral underline 48 font sense of the word.
And our physicality, which could be our genitals, our chromosomes, our reproductive systems, we're all on a spectrum of maleness and femaleness, and it's important to share with the listeners that intersex is not a third biological sex category.
No,
we're within a spectrum of maleness and femaleness, and some people are more typical than others, we're less typical than others, but it's all a case of being male or female and just having physical differences.
Yeah, well, look, that's exactly it. I mean, we're all, as I say, different in that way. And even if, just for a second, putting aside variation of sex characteristics, I'm sure in many ways, even including on maleness and femaleness, the 98.3%, the 48.15, who we can instantly go, oh, put M on a birth certificate and 48.15F, there's probably differences in there as well. We just maybe haven't spotted them, don't know them, or they're not viewed negatively by medicine and science. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And in Australia, there has been an option to put an alternative marker, if you like, on birth certificates for quite a while for intersex, as in, i.e., intermediate or other. But it's never been used. There is no, that we're aware of, that's never happened, because we're male or female. And sometimes, at least in terms of the appearance of the genitals at birth, it may be more difficult to define that maleness or femaleness. But, this is where we start to come up against some of the issues for our community about choices being, cosmetic choices being made around that. But, but it's just important to know that we are just part of that spectrum. Yeah.
Well, that is the thing, and it leads us into the topic as we talk about variation of sex characteristics on 3CR 855 AM, 3CR Digital, 3cr.org.au and 3CR On Demand with my guest Paul Byrne Moroney. The situation where the variation is, I'll say, different to expectations of in big, big, big inverted commas, expected, as I say, male or expected female, and what happens. And I think I'd hope amongst 3CR listeners there's some awareness of that, but I won't assume it, so just a little bit on that. But also, what's been the outcomes of that, and what are we now trying to do to prevent things from, to get better outcomes, let's say, might be a good way to frame that question. The whole surgery thing, where it's been and where are we at now and what are we doing? Yeah.
So we are very clear that sometimes it is medically necessary to do a surgical procedure on a newborn or a child for their health. There are some innate variations of sex characteristics that another trait of them, for example, is salt wasting. So if that's occurring, this child is not going to survive, and it's necessary to have interventions. However, for anyone who has atypical, unfortunately the word that is bandied around is ambiguous, and ambiguous immediately brings up, we can't have a child growing up with ambiguous genitalia. What's going to be the stigma and their experience growing up in school? What's their sense of self, going to be around that? And to be frank, the legislation that we now have in the ACT and Victoria, which we will unpack a bit, is saying it is not the choice of a surgeon and it is not the choice of the parents to decide who that child is.
Yeah.
And even what they will be raised as, because there is no evidence. The only evidence is that if children have these medically unnecessary cosmetic procedures on them, they end up having lots more surgeries,
yep,
lot more intervention, lot more attention drawn to them, and a lot more trauma.
Yep.
And even more stigma. And also, too, they're often told to hide away, to not say anything, to, you know, to that they are basically a human anomaly that should never be discussed. So there is no evidence, there's never been any evidence to suggest that having doing these surgeries benefits the child,
yep,
and later the adult. It's also obvious that a baby doesn't have the agency,
yeah,
to identify as anything or, you know, that sort of thing. So all we are saying is that medically unnecessary, that any procedure that can be deferred until an individual is able to make an informed decision for, yep, himself needs to be deferred. And now that is enshrined in law,
yep,
in the ACT in Victoria.
Yeah, and in the ACT in Victoria, and you know, the ACT, a lot of work went into that legislation,
yeah,
to sort of make it as best as possible. And you know, whilst obviously there might be dot and comma variations around the states and territories, it gave a good template, but we'd hope it could be as consistent as possible. As we move around all 8 states and territories and get it done, which would be wonderful. But you've answered a question there in relation to the panel. And there's 2 things there. Tell us a little about the panel, how that, who's on it, how it works, and also now, is it a recommendation or a directive that the panel gives in the Victoria and the ACT?
I'll be honest, I'm not entirely across all of that high-level legislative information.
Mm-hmm.
What I do know is, from a learning perspective, from the ACT, in the few years that it's been, it came into law in 2023, so we're only 3 years into it.
Yeah.
One of the important factors is the composition of the advisory group. So if a child is born, then under law, there needs to be a discussion, or it needs to be deferred to an advisory group to discuss whether or not a procedure should happen, whether or not it's necessary. It's a no-brainer for the listeners that if those committees are top-heavy with medical people who all of their life have learned through school and practiced that basically these children are born with abnormalities, that it is necessary to operate. And then you have a small number of people with lived experience, as in they are intersex on that panel, then that's going to complicate those decisions.
Yeah.
And it also gives lesser voice to those with the lived experience who can say, hang on a minute, that happened to me. You're wrong. Everything that you've argued for why this procedure should proceed is not accurate.
Yeah.
You can't provide me the evidence of it, and I can provide you the evidence of the opposite. So there needs to be a complementary representation. And when governments say that they value lived experience, it needs to be genuine.
Yeah, not token.
They need to actually not exactly. And there's just been for too long, too much tokenism around this. We really want to hear from you.
Yeah, hear from us, but are you really listening? Are you going to take action that we recommend, etc.?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And one thing that listeners, if you're not sure, we now have in Victoria the health safeguards for people born with variations of sex characteristics, 2025. And one of the differences with this particular one is it also has the restricted medical treatment oversight panel, as it's called here in Victoria, but it's also a little stick. And that little stick is that there's been an introduction of a prohibition against knowingly or recklessly providing unapproved medical treatment in certain circumstances. So basically, that means if a hospital or a physician does do surgeries on a child that were not necessary, but to the extent that they are doing it regularly, recklessly, then they can be held to account.
Good.
And that doesn't exist in the ACT provisions.
Okay.
Under their laws. So there are, and also Tasmania actually is also starting to progress.
Ooh.
The potential. We can't talk about it. There's a lot of cloak and dagger going on, as there always is with legislation.
Yeah.
But that they may well be the next cab off the rank.
Yeah.
Jurisdictionally, to protect our children. And, you know, this law just hasn't suddenly arrived on our doorstep.
No.
This is the work of Morgan Carpenter, Tony Briffer, and so many people. And it's important, listeners, for you to understand, this isn't my lived experience. So when the Victorian legislation came through, I was being asked to be interviewed on camera about it because I was at the Parliament. I said, no, I'm not the person to speak to. Just because I'm intersex doesn't mean that I've had surgeries and that I can share that. There are plenty of other people here that you should be speaking to.
Yeah.
And many of those their stories are covered in the Equality Australia report, The Missing Voice, which I encourage listeners to have a look at as well. But yeah, it's the legislation has come about after decades of advocacy.
Yeah.
And it's about time.
Well, very, very much so. It's about time. The next step in my has to be to get this around to the remaining six states and territories. And I'd heard Tasmania's the likely next cab off the rank as well. It seems that Tasmania, I think somehow, it's the nature of their parliament that it's a smaller population. It's probably easier to connect people, get the work done, whereas the far-flung areas of our bigger states and territories, combined with also a small population in a large area, can make things difficult, which is why...
And also the structure of the parliament.
That's the thing there. House has a lot of independence, genuine independence and that sort of thing, and the lower house elected by proportional representation. Yeah, and I think this is the thing that perhaps people are not quite clear about. There's a whole range of variations of sex characteristics, genitals, chromosomes, hormones, and so not everyone... that lived expertise will have its, for lack of better words, those sort of subgroupings, if you like. Yeah.
Yeah. It's also important to know, for example, when I learned at the age of 28 in 1994 that I have Klinefelter syndrome, I had to learn for myself. I didn't hear the word intersex until 10 years ago.
Okay.
22 years later.
Wowzies.
And to this day, my endocrinologists out at Monash Health don't consider people with sex chromosome variations to be intersex. So there are a large... That's why we're... And you're hearing it today, listeners, that Sally and I are shifting between using the word intersex and to innate variation to sex characteristics, because there is a large number of people with different types of variations that have only ever known the medical term to describe themselves, such as Klinefelter syndrome and myself. So I didn't... as I said, I was sent on my way, not even with psychological support or referrals about how these hormones were going to affect my body and my mind and my libido, for that matter, which was a... I basically had puberty at the age of 30. And there's just no support. So what often happens, and you might be alluding to this, Sally, is that peer support organisations grow around particular variations. So the Klinefelter syndrome, I founded the Klinefelter syndrome support group of Victoria in 2006 with another member of my community when we were both asked to go and speak at the Children's Hospital in Melbourne.
Right.
There were a number of parents there. And the physicians, nurses, doctors stood up there and said, "There's only about 30% of XXY people or Klinefelter people will ever know, and that's because they don't have any symptoms. That's because they're asymptomatic." And I stood up for my talk, and I began by saying, "Everything that you said is total bullshit."
Whoa,
total. Yes, I know the time of day. But
no, that's all right.
Okay.
No.
That's word for word. That's what I said.
No, that's
fine. And their faces dropped, and I said, "I experienced a hellish life. all of the things I've learned about Klinefelter's since I learned about it, which was the, at that point 12 years previous, I had. And I can say now in 2026 that I have met many, many people in my variation who would, who learned about it late in life, some as age of 50 or 60 or 70, every single one of them, when you go through the checklist of what it means to have this variation, says, yep, that happened to me, yep, that happened to me, yep, that happened to me. So it's the medical profession, if they're saying that we're asymptomatic, they're trying to get off the hook.
Yep.
Of the fact that they don't know enough about us to recognise it and to be able to go down the pathways necessary to recognise it and support those individuals.
Yeah. Look, just clarifying my response, it was like, I was just sort of like, wow, well, you know, sort of, I think we need to call things as they are and be assertive. It's just, yeah. I was, my response was, I'm wondering what I was, sort of my why was, I wonder how they took that. Not that it, that,
well, they, that. Well, you know, well, as I say, their jaws dropped. You know, we talk about hierarchies.
Mm.
I was there to talk about my lived experience, which I've been doing ever since.
Yeah.
Hundreds of talks. They were the top of the medical, you know, hierarchy, and they were no doubt shocked that I said that to them. But out of that, his name was Kieran, and I started the support group. And also at that time, we also have Australian X and Y Spectrum Support Group, AXIS, which is the Australian one, not the American one.
Yep.
So they're supporting people with a range of sex characteristics. We have Peer Support Australia, which used to be AIS, Androgen Insensitivity Support Group of Australia.
Yep.
But that is now Peer Support Australia, and I'm the Victorian rep for that.
Gotcha.
So, you know, and that's, and that is now a support group for every person in Australia who has an innate variation. We have retreats. We have our wonderful Interlink Psychosocial Support, which is an accredited support service. And we're going the big guns, you know, now, but we are still only a small number of people in the community.
Of course, yeah. You know, there are two things I just wanted to clear up or clarify, from our conversation far. In relation to the legislation in Vic and ACTE.
Yes.
So the panel has a discussion on whether a surgery is needed or not. Can parents slash guardians, is it compulsory for them to follow that recommendation?
Yes.
They must. Okay.
The whole point of having the oversight panel is to, I know this is controversial, that I think it's always going to be controversial. For example, might even be in Tasmania, a discussion about whether or not parents should be members of the oversight panel, the actual parents of the child. And, of course, there's always the argument that parents have the right to make decisions about the health and well-being of their child in every capacity. And so they might be feeling disempowered and extremely uncomfortable that they can't make decisions about those surgeries. That through education. So the intersex community here in Australia now have Yellow Tick, which is an accredited intersex inclusion training available to hospitals, schools, you name it. Often because Rainbow Tick accreditation just didn't adequately include us, so we've done it ourselves. Education is the key.
Yeah.
And so whether parents are on those panels or not, the key is how the decisions are communicated to them and how they are supported to understand why decisions were made, and that the procedures that we're talking about are deferrable, and they could happen, can happen later in life if their child, when they're able to make an informed decision for themselves, which may be in their mid or later teens or adult time, can make that decision for themselves, and it's not going to be problematic for their child for that deferral to occur. As I said, if a procedure is medically necessary,
go for it.
Then it will take place. But it's like sometimes when I do my talks, we often say that intersex people are 1.7% of the population, yep. same as people with red hair.
Yep.
If a child was born today at the Children's Hospital and they had red hair, you could see that they had red hair when they were born.
Yeah.
And the physicians went to the parents and said, look, only 1.7% of the population has red hair. Most have brown, blonde, or black hair. We're concerned that your child might experience stigma, might be teased growing up, mm-hmm. that they're going to really struggle with their comfort around who they are. And so we've developed some pills so that mm-hmm. and your child will need to take them for the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like your child to have blonde, black, or brown hair?
Gotcha.
Now, if listeners consider that to be completely off the wall, we are saying, why is that absurd? And operating on intersex kids, not absurd.
I'm with you. That's a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant way to put it. That just makes, makes it so clear. And, the thing is, in the past, we know parents didn't get any information or have any say in it at all. And it needs to be, as you say, an informed choice. And that's, as you say, it's communication so critical. And that's communicating it in a way that gets it across. That is, like, excellent.
And people often say, if you've met someone with red hair, chances are you've met an intersex person. But I like to reverse it. If you've met an intersex person, then you likely met someone with red hair. And if people are like, but of course I've met someone with red hair.
Well, unless they, dye the tips blonde.
I go to hydrotherapy at Watermark in Greensboro, and I was there recently, and there was 40 people there using the facilities, and 15 of them had red hair. And I'm thinking this 1.7%, just on the group I've got in front of me, is total rubbish. 25%, excuse me. But there are only one. Call it 1.7 to 2%.
They weren't dyeing their roots dark or blonde.
No. Yeah. Well, some of the older people in the pool may well have been. So I may have taken a guess there. But no, that was a large number. And I guess the other thing, it's difficult for, I'm sure, listeners to hear this type of thing as well, in reference to our differences recognisable in vitro.
Yeah.
But sadly, name an IVF clinic in Australia, Melbourne, anywhere and around the world where they do prenatal or vitro tests around recognising if a embryo carries a certain condition. Mm-hmm. For want of a better term, when they learn that a child is XXY, invariably the embryo is discarded. This test has been available in Australia since the early 70s. I was born in 1966. Mm-hmm. Had I been conceived by my parents in the 70s, there is a high likelihood I would not be sitting here in the studio today.
Wow.
And in some countries around the world, like Scandinavia, because it's the same test to test for Down syndrome and things like that, people with certain innate variations of sex characteristics don't exist. Now, I've got a degree, relationships, I've achieved a great deal in my life. I've been a zookeeper, a tour guide, all these wonderful things. It's eugenics, mm-hmm. 101.
Yep.
Based on fear that some person in the reproductive industry, the assisted reproductive technologies industry, is saying them, your child might have some learning difficulties or they may not be able to have a child. Now, that's not an absolute.
Yeah.
I could have had children through procedures available now to find viable sperm in my testes. It's not an absolute, but We're being discarded, we're being eliminated from society. That's tough to hear, but again, I don't want anyone out there with red hair or any other difference in appearance, and it can be triggering. But if that test did pick up even some of those other physical characteristics, and parents were being offered the opportunity to not continue the pregnancy because of those differences, how absurd would that be? But that's happening all the time.
Yeah, all over the world. It's sobering and it's frightening, but, you know, as you say, we've got to say it. I will say to people, if there is anything, you know, that is distressing, please talk to someone about it. And I'm going to be I hope that QLife, including Switchboard, might be a good place to talk to, you know, for people with variation of sex characteristics and intersex, which I also have a question about. In terms of that terminology, but if that is a good place, then 1-800-184-527. Because it's not for me as an endosex person to say whether it is.
Yeah, well, Intersex Peer Support Australia for our community is the best place to tap into. So
I'll put the link to that
isupport.org.au. There are a lot of LGBTIQA plus organisations. Thorn Harbour comes to mind as well, but again, they don't have people working there that have lived experience.
Yeah, which is the critical thing. Yep. Yeah. All right, and well, I'll put the link to IPSA into the chat. Now, the thing that I want, into the podcast link for the show.
Sure.
Now, the thing that I wanted to clarify is I would like to be precise on the difference between variation of sex characteristics and intersex, you know, what does each cover and what doesn't each cover, even though IPSA's website does have it. Let's get it onto the verbals.
And if listeners want to dive deep into that, go to interaction.org.au. Yep. That's our national advocacy organisation, and also ilink.net.au, because that's not only our psychosocial support organisation and work, it's also a resource hub. So that's been set up to provide that sort of information on the different variations. But in terms of your question, intersex historically, if we go way back, was used as a term to effectively mean the hermaphrodite type individual. And I use that term in a historical context.
Yeah.
There are many people in our community who embrace the term, just as I'm not a queer person, but a large, probably most LGBTIQA plus people might embrace the term queer. So it's about not making assumptions on the applicability of terminology. But what intersex is now, contemporarily, is an umbrella term.
Yep.
For people born with innate variations of sex characteristics, that might be their gonads, their chromosomes, their reproductive and their hormones. So it's purely, and when I put that to my endocrinologist, who doesn't think I'm intersex, the penny dropped for her and she said, oh, now I get it. Because she'd come through those years of medicalization and other terms, you know, like, and listeners, you'll know, you know, the old Tin Pan Alley from the 19th century, the bearded lady, all that sort of stuff, you know. Certainly sometimes they might have put a beard on a woman, but we know from a fact that our community was often subject to that type of, horrible circumstance of being put in a cage because of the difference. And so it was more for those intersex variations that were more overtly presenting as being, you know, marrying maleness and femaleness. That's the old term of intersex. Now it's an umbrella term. And therefore, when we encourage people to go to these websites to learn about the many variations, they're all innate variations of sex characteristics and they're intersex variations.
Right. Okay. Thank you for putting that one across.
I hope I managed to hold my thoughts together enough to explain that well.
Well, it is your lived expertise. So, I genuinely say I'm sure it is good. There is something else, of course, a couple of things we need to cover as we get, the time flies so fast. Here we are at, as we broadcast, it's around this program for the first time, it's nearly a quarter to one. But there are two more things to cover. One, which actually could be a bit challenging, but I think we've got to talk about it. the census. Yes. And, well, intersex people not included. I have heard different, I'm going to put in inverted commas, explanations, but I'm not someone of that lived expertise. You are, so you might know more than me. I'd welcome your thoughts. I'll just leave it at that and ask for your thoughts on the census process, the outcomes, and what needs to change to make sure we get it right in 2031.
Indeed, by which time I'll be 65, so it would be nice to be counted by then.
Yeah.
We have been told, no guarantees. Mm. So, again, even myself, only knowing the word intersex for 10 years, I've been involved in advocacy around the census for 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
When here in Victoria and regionally across the country, LGBTIQA plus people were invited to come to consultation forums to talk about the benefits of being included in the census. Continue to be part of that process. Morgan Carpenter at the higher level with the Attorney General's office and more directly the ABS has been a part of that. And of course, Tony Briffer and so many more.
Mm-hmm.
We, as I mentioned before, 1.7 at a minimum percent of the population. Those people, and if you know otherwise, what I've read, Sally, those people who are transgender or, you know, genderverse, come in at 0.9% of the population.
Mm-hmm.
So call it half.
Yeah.
But, and yet this year, and we celebrate this, of course, rightly so, gender and sexual diversity has now been added to the census.
Yeah.
But for the our community, we haven't. And what are the odd things about, I mean, it's very upsetting to be told again and again and again that if they weren't able to come up with an appropriate question to ask that would be understood by the average person responding to the census on census night. That is a requirement for any question in the census, and it always has been.
Yeah.
For the online form, in the questions about sexuality and gender diversity, there was a button you could push titled More Information.
Mm.
So that if you didn't understand what it was asking, then you could find out and then answer in an informed way. Now, obviously, on a paper copy of the census, that is not true for gender diversity, sexual diversity either.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, why could they not have the question that we would suggest they have, and I won't go into that right now, but and then have more information as an option so people can learn more about it. Why have it for one and not for the other?
Yeah.
So the other thing is they say that due to their belief that the Australian population doesn't understand what it means to be intersex or have an innate variation, then the data they would get from the responses can't be relied upon.
Yeah.
Because people might say yes or no when they are or aren't.
Yeah.
Because they don't know what it means. That's where education comes in. How much census community education went on around the inclusion of the new questions for gender and sexually diverse prior to the census to support people to understand what it was about?
Yep.
The same amount that would have been necessary perhaps for our community.
Yeah.
The only way that we're ever going to be included is if the community and can demonstrate that they understand who we are.
Yeah.
And that's only going to happen if our voices are heard. The other challenge with the census now is that a person who's intersex who was assigned, for example, male at birth,
mm-hmm.
who now lives as female or non-binary, mm-hmm. but is not transgender.
Yeah.
The algorithm of the census will class them as transgender. So the irony of not including us in the census is that the data for transgender people has been skewed.
Oh, I'm just propping my head up so it doesn't hit the desk here at 3CR. I mean, hey, I'm all for saying there's more trans people, but not that way, please. Seriously, no.
Yeah, and importantly too, and again, you know, we know that the listeners of 3CR are a highly educated bunch of people. That's it's a no-brainer that by having our information and our data available from the census, then we can recognise how many of us are intersex across the country. We can apply for grants and funding. Yeah. We can it assists with our advocacy for health, for education, and everything that all of life,
mm-hmm.
The support that we need. And unfortunately, for the next 5 years, we're going to now continue to not have data about our existence. And our prevalence and our diversity. And it's just incredibly frustrating that we've now got to get back on the advocacy bandwagon and continue to fight to be included.
Yeah, very, very disappointing. Look, I've got to just clear a couple of messages because we are running out of time. So we'll hit the pause button on our conversation there and come back and wrap up the show, tell you what's coming up on Freedom of Species, and finish it all up in just a minute. 3CR, 855 AM, 3CR Digital, 3cr.org.au, 3CR On Demand, Out of the Pan with Sally and guest Paul. Y Plus Pride Victoria is a not-for-profit organisation dedicated to equality and justice for multigender attracted people, including bi, pan, regardless of label, or no label at all. We organise community events and advocate for better policies and services. Y Plus Pride runs discussion groups which offer a safe and fun space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your sexual identity, and provide peer support. Y Plus Pride is especially keen to hear from multi-gender attracted people in regional and rural Victoria. Donations to Y Plus Pride are tax deductible. For more information, visit our website at byplusprideVic.org.au, email info@byplusprideVic.org.au, or find us on Facebook or Instagram.
A 3CR supporter.
I'm bisexual.
Out of the Pan thanks Go Kindly for their sponsorship of this program. Go Kindly creates high-quality, locally-made bedding, donating 50% of profits to support women and gender-diverse people experiencing housing stress. Check out gokindly.com.au and take their pillow quiz.
On Demand, Out of the Pan with Sally, First Broadcasting, noon through one every Sunday afternoon. I'll come back and wrap up the conversation with Paul Byrne Moroney in just a second. Just a few things. Some of our recurring listeners, such as Roving and Jenny, have sent in messages about the Sydney Swans. I'll try to be polite and say situation. I'm going to do a special on that next week, and we'll see if there's more information that comes to light. Let the dust settle a little and see what we can do about it and link it to long-term stuff. But in the very short term, if you're listening to this program live in around 6 or 7 minutes, we will have on Freedom of Species, and the team today will be talking about human and non-human animal reproduction and adoption. Rotations at 2, Queering the Air at 3, 3CR Radical Radio. That is your lineup for the middle of this Sunday afternoon. And also thanks to our sponsor, Go Kindly, sponsoring Out of the Pan. Paul, there's so much to cover on intersex and variation of sex characteristics, and damn it, I think we've covered most of it, but there's a couple of things left. And I mean, I just feel the census thing leaves me very frustrated. You've explained things so logically, yet intersex got ruled out, and I had some ideas that may have worked, but this is what you said about people listening to people with lived expertise, and treating us equally and all that sort of thing. But you've mentioned a couple of times lots of people have come before you in terms of intersex advocacy. I wanted to mention at least one or two because last weekend we had the Pride Awards down here, and Tony Briffer, who you've mentioned, one Person of the Year Award.
The giant we talk about, being on the shoulders of the giants.
Yeah.
Tony's the giants of giants. in terms of advocacy for our community. Folks, Tony was on 60 Minutes in 2000.
Yeah.
You know, Jeff like, you know, has been fighting for our appropriate inclusion, support and protections for the longest time. For anyone who doesn't know, Tony is also an elected official at mm-hmm. Hobson's Bay and went on to become mayor. Has been at the forefront of this work, including a document called the Darlington Statement, a consensus statement from our community from 2017. Yeah, and there are many others. Certainly, Tony won Person of the Year at the recent Globe Awards, yeah. And so well deserved. I think I was nominated for the Volunteer Award last year, and had I won, I think they give you 20 seconds to make a speech when you get up there. So if you hear a speech and it's really quick, that's why. But yeah, so well deserved. And Tony's just so thrilled. Didn't expect to win. Tony's an extremely humble person as well. I would never even dream of having been nominated.
Mm.
And importantly, too, Tony was at the forefront and ultimately led to the legislation here in Victoria for the protection of intersex children, and got in the ear of every single imaginable politician. I was in the chamber with Tony and others when that legislation was passed. Tony, understandably, was weeping with joy and elation and definitely relief because, as I say, I mean, so much work for so long without actually getting any traction. And when that was passed in February this year, absolutely fantastic to be in the room with Tony. And Tony will, if you get Tony on, will actually say that she had popped out to the toilet. And then everyone was saying, "Where's Tony? Where's Tony?" And Tony got the word, "You need to get back in the chamber, we're about to pass." So, yeah, absolutely well-deserved. And, again, folks, go to darlington.org.au, read and affirm the Darlington Statement, apply it in your life and workplace, and that's a really great way to find out about our community as well as all the other websites that'll end up on the podcast.
Put the three links in there for IPSA Interaction and the Darlington Statement into the podcast, but we are way out of time. As I said, thank you, Paul, for coming in. There's not enough time, so we might have to get you back or get Tony
anytime.
Or something. And, yep, remember to listen to the INS on Joy and keep up to, right on top of lived expertise and other things there. Once again, to Roving and Jenny, as I say, want to cover the Sydney Swans and sexism and all that sort of thing. We'll give that a full show next week, one way or another. But right now, I've got to make way for Freedom of Species. On a totally lighter note, apropos of nothing, very quickly, this one, next track, is from Greg Champion's The Customs CD, and it doesn't apply to Australia in the first test in Bangladesh and won't need to, by the sounds of it, in the second test up in Mackay. I made 100 in the backyard at Mum's. Paul, thank you for coming in.
Very welcome.
I'm Sally Goldner. Everyone, stay difficult, stay happy, and I'll catch you next week.
As I went out to have a bat just the other day, I had no idea what was coming my way. I played a chance this innings and I earned every run, and I made 100 in the backyard at Mum's. Oh, I made 100 in the backyard at Mum's. I clobbered and I crunched every fabulous run. I toiled and I sweated, and when the day was done, I'd made 100 in the backyard at Mum's. I started out real shanky-like, just poking around. Me sister with her off-breaks, well, she had me pinned down. But when me little brother bowled, I gave him, and when we stopped for lunch, I was 24 not out.
Well, then me uncle Nev came on bowling his quicks, but I was scoring freely with deflections and...
Listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.